Call the meeting to order. Members, the order is supposed to be Swales Downey Slawick, but I think we're going to go ahead with Representative Downey since he's here, and we can get started and go with that. Representative Downey, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
If you'd like to proceed and tell us about your bill.
Sure, I will move House File 1411 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Policy and Finance Bill. And I have some testifiers from the Department of Education coming down to support me here, but maybe I can give just a quick minute or two introduction and then turn it over to them to walk through the particulars. I think this is a fairly straightforward bill. This is, in fact, the bill that represents the appropriations from the governor's proposed budget and should be consistent with all of the budget testimony and the presentation of the governor's budget proposal from prior hearings. So I don't think you'll find anything surprising here, and the numbers should be consistent with Ms. Adrian's worksheet that we've been looking at throughout the course of the session here as well. So this bill is focused exclusively on appropriations in early childhood education, prevention, and self-sufficiency and lifelong learning categories, and is really very much specifically focused on the appropriations and should be bereft of any policy implications. You'll notice that the funding amounts are consistent with the budget advice from the governors, as well as the shift in the early childhood education section for school readiness and early childhood family education aid and health and development screening aid. I think I covered all three that have the shifts related to them. So with that, I'll hand it over to the Department of Education people to just very quickly walk through and present the appropriations to you. If you're able to follow along with the worksheet that we've been working off of, you'll be able to follow this pretty easily.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I'm Karen Carlson with the Department of Education Early Learning Services Director. And I think maybe Representative Downey already did my part, actually. I was going to tell you two things. One, the appropriations for the early childhood area are the first six in the bill in Article 1. And as he said, I was going to tell you that the school readiness, the ECFE aid, and the health and developmental screening, the numbers here reflect the November forecast numbers and the governor's proposed 80-20 shift. So when you look at those numbers, that's why they look the way they do. Head Start is a direct appropriation, and the ones on the next page, this Educate Parent Partnership is kind of a, I think, kind of a strange title. It's the website for parents, so it's easier to remember that way. And then the kindergarten entrance assessment that we talked about in committee is the Subdivision 7. So that's it.
Thank you. Can you point out exactly where the shift is in the bill? Which lines?
On the shift is in lines 1.13 and 1.14. In 1.19, 1.20, and 2.3 and 2.4.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Daniel Smith, jumping out of order from Barry Schaefer to stay in the order of the articles in the bill. I'm the supervisor in the Center for Post-Secondary Success in the department, and I'm pointing to the appropriations in Article 2 on prevention. Again, this is current law accounting for the February forecast and the shift, the 90-10 to 80-20 shift. You will see that shift reflected on page 3, line 3.2, on 3.8, and that would be it, where you would see the shift showing up in showing how the appropriation drifts from 1 year into the second.
Could you, excuse me, can you repeat exactly what lines those are?
I'm sorry, I'm. Thank you. On lines, if you look at line 3.1 and 3.2, you will see that the 2010 appropriation includes a 10% for 2009. We're on line 3.2. The 2011 appropriation includes a larger amount for 2010. That would account for the shift from 10% to
20%. 3.27 and 3.28? No, you're on 3.28. We have different numbers, maybe.
Yeah.
Can you tell
me? Oh, I'm sorry.
The numbers that might
be. Am I looking at a different copy?
Yeah.
My apologies. Aren't we on? Because I'm on 1411 that I dragged from the stack, but okay. So, all right. Yes, 3.7 and 3.8. Yeah, that's what I had. And 3.1 and 3.2.
Mm-hmm. That's the same
one? Okay. Yeah, that'd be correct.
Maybe they have it.
So, okay, got it. Thank you.
Again, very briefly, the community education funding is current law, as is the Adults with Disabilities Program aid. The hearing impaired adults appropriation is for a small pot of funds that's available to help with unanticipated costs for programs of school districts and technical colleges serving adults who are hearing impaired. And the school-age care revenue, a very small appropriation. It's my understanding that the department anticipates no real demand on those funds, but they put a small amount of money in case, because those funds are all going out in levy rather than aid, but in case there's something unanticipated.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Yep. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the school-age care revenue used for, if I could ask, please?
Madam Chair, Representative, I can't give you much detail. I do not work directly with the program out of the agency, and so we will have to get that information for you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Barry Schaefer, the Director of Adult Basic Education for the department. There's two appropriations in Article 3, Self-Sufficiency and Lifelong Learning, that impact adult basic education. The first one is in Subdivision 2, and it's the Adult Basic Education Aid. The funds shown there are the base funds as prescribed in current law for the ADE programs in the state. And they do, and the two lines where it breaks the funds out, reflect an 80-20 shift for the future years. The second set of funds for ABE is the GED test fund of $125,000 a year. That also is base funding as prescribed in current law. And those funds are used to offset the cost of the GED test for individuals taking those tests.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Dowling? Okay. Well, would you like to any closing comments?
I'll offer one closing comment and then renew my motion. You know, I think this is an extremely good bill for early childhood. I know everybody here would have some tweak to some programs, myself included. But as a starting point for the majority party, probably largely to go into their deliberations on the final presentation of the omnibus bill, I would just encourage serious consideration of these amounts. In a tough budget year where you got to make tough decisions to prioritize programs and areas in the state, I think we all share the desire to prioritize early childhood. And here is a bill that I think does that by essentially protecting base funding and as best we can holding the early childhood education component of the budget harmless. So I'd just encourage folks as we move forward here to do our best to try and protect these amounts. And remembering Todd Otis's comments, Mr. Otis, the president of Ready for K, when I asked him whether we should prioritize early childhood over K-12, and his answer was that if we looked at the state overall and did a prioritization, that he felt that early childhood education and K-12 should both be priorities, and that if we had that kind of a prioritization, both program areas would do well. So I guess here's the first stab at trying to do that, at least on the early childhood education front. So with that, I would renew my motion to move House File 1411 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus early childhood policy and finance bill.
Representative Downey renews his motion that the bill, House File 1411, be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, members, we have a little bit of a quandary here because Representative Swales' bill, as we had hoped to have first, and we're still waiting for her, and we can't seem to locate her.
Oh, no.
Is that right? So, Marcia Swales, so we're trying to, I guess I can go ahead and do my bill. It's hard to know kind of what to do here, but I think we really have to move ahead. So, Representative Rosenthal, are you ready to come up?
Welcome, Representative. Would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I will move file 1026. Mr. Chair, be included for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Omnibus Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What we're doing right now is we're doing a lot of the department bills, and this is the policy bill for the department. So there are several changes in here. You see some of the same people up here that would like to tell you about those, and I think we'll start with Ms. Carlson.
Okay.
Representative Clark is the bill in.
Amendment. I'd like to move the AO90113 amendment to get the bill to the people put on the demonstrate that we need it.
Representative Flowick moves Amendment 113. Does everybody have the amendment? Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, members, and I will ask the Secretary from the Department to also include the information that's in the amendment. Thank you.
Members and Mr. Chair, Sharon Carlson again, Early Learning Services Director from the Department of Education. Section 1 is a, some of you may recall in 2005, language was added to the ECSE statute requesting districts to submit a biennial plan to the department to begin in 2011. And this was an effort to align ECSE requirements with school readiness requirements and Head Start requirements to improve accountability. And kind of a middle of the night thing happened, and the appropriation was not appropriated in order to review the plans and automate the plans. So we're asking to eliminate the provisions. And in your amendment, lines 1.13 all the way down to 1.27 for the entire first page is about this. In the original bill,
could you move the microphone a little bit closer to you?
Thank you. In the original, in the bill, you have a repealer in section 11. Instead of the repealer, the amendment is bringing forward the language because, as you'll see in the amendment, Subdivision 13B is still viable, so the repealer didn't work. So, as Representative Paul said, it's a technical amendment. Subdivision or Section 2 is you have probably heard a lot of talk, is an ongoing discussion, lots of talk about an early childhood system. And the Department of Education, Department of Human Services decided that maybe we would, it would behoove us to have a definition of an early childhood system. And so we created this definition together. It's pretty comprehensive. We thought it would be a good thing, given the Governor's Council on Early Childhood and other discussions going on, to clarify and kind of make consistent the definition. So that's Section 2. Section 3 begins the revisions to school readiness. This is a school readiness program. And Section 3 specifically further clarifies that the purpose of the school readiness program is to
prepare kids for kindergarten, most especially kids at risk of not being prepared for kindergarten. Always a mouthful. Section 4 continues the revisions, and they're fairly minor revisions except for the two I'm going to point out. And the first one I'm going to point out is on line 2.3, on line 2.30, which is serving children a minimum of 12 hours. And I think we might have talked about this a little bit in committee before, but we're adding this requirement. There's all these revisions we're making are based, well-grounded in research, and the department is declaring that below 12 hours, there's the dosage below 12 hours a week for kids that are at risk is just not adequate. And so we're proposing that changes to a threshold of 12 hours. It will we recognize it's a trade-off for the total number of kids being served by some programs. Some districts will have to make changes to their programs to have it be 12 hours a week. But since there's all this research that says kids don't benefit from less than 12 hours, we're deciding to put this policy forward.
Mr. Chair, just for the members, what we'd like to do is get this language into consideration for the final bill, but we're not, this is a decision I think we have to talk a lot more about and see if it's something we want to move forward with. So, thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
And if you want to draw a parallel, you heard some Head Start testimony not too long ago for a bill that you laid over for inclusion where the early Head Start rate is increasing, the cost is increasing, and there's a trade-off there for the number of kids being served, too. So this is a similar dilemma. And then the other one I want to point out is in your amendment, lines 2.3 and 2.4, in the amendment is we've never had requirements for teachers in school readiness before. We've never had requirements for supervisors. And so we're adding language that teachers have to be knowledgeable in early childhood curriculum, assessment, and instruction. And you'll probably notice that it does not say licensed. And for comparison, ECFE teachers are required to be licensed, but in this case, in school readiness, we're not putting licensure forward as a requirement. Then if you go to Section 5 in the bill, you'll see that that's deleted. That was the original teacher language, and we used the word employ in the provision and realized that that wasn't such a good word to use because school readiness is able to contract out with private preschools or community-based organizations, and so we didn't want to connote that the teachers had to be employed by the school district. So. And Section 6, I know you've heard about in testimony, this is now to give school readiness programs the 4 stars for the quality rating system pilot, like Head Start and accredited child care centers receive.
Mr. Chair, this is another one we'll want to discuss carefully about automatically giving school readiness 4 stars. Thank you,
Ms. Carlson.
That's the end of mine.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Could you identify yourself, please, for the record?
Yes, Daniel Smith, Department of Education, Center for Post-Secondary Success. I'll reference Section 7 of the bill having to do with youth service programs. Youth service programs have a permissive levy under community education in Minnesota Statute 124D.20. The only section that we are requesting to change is on page 4, section D, having to do with the department maintaining a list of acceptable projects for youth development, youth service. The department does not maintain such a list, and I've been unable to locate any within the department, and I've been there for about 10 years, so only working with this program for 7 or 8. So we think that we've discussed this with the Community Education Association at meetings we hold with them quarterly, and we believe that deleting the requirement that the department approve such projects or maintain such a list would be appropriate. Moving on to Section 8 of the bill, having to do with the Community Education Annual Report.
There is a requirement in the Community Education Annual Report that was submitted several years ago. I'm sorry, I forgot to look up the date. That required districts to report on the cost per participant and cost per contact hour in their program. We have run some runs, and we get fairly dramatically different reports on this, on these figures from various school districts, and we don't know of anyone who's using the data per se. So we are recommending that we strike that language. Again, we have it was actually at the request of the Community Ed Association that we strike that language from the requirements of the annual report.
Thank you. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Barry Schaefer, the State Director of Adult Basic Education. I'm going to refer to a small change in the section 9. Under Adult Basic Education Supplemental Service Grant. A supplemental service grant is a grant we may use, 2% of the state appropriation may go to grants to nonprofit organizations and ABE providers that enable these programs to deliver services that are more efficiently delivered on a statewide basis rather than an individual ABE consortia. The change we are promoting is changing the level of a grant recipient from $100,000 to a 20% of the total appropriation for supplemental grants. There's two reasons for that. The first reason is that when this law was written at a $100,000 cap, that amount was 20% of the appropriation, so we want to keep it in line with the appropriation itself. Appropriation has grown over time. And secondly, some of our larger providers, like the Minnesota Literacy Council and Learning Disabilities Association, have the capacity to deliver more services than simply $100,000 and could benefit from a grant that was slightly above the $100,000 mark and under the 20% of the total.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Lisa Barnes. I'm also with the Department of Education, and I'm just going to go through Section 10 and 11, and if you'll notice in the amendment, these are actually stricken from the House Early Childhood clone of the department's bill. Section 10 will still be in 1179, but because this committee doesn't actually have jurisdiction over that section, we have stricken it from this bill.
Can you remind us what 1179 is?
That's the the full department bill, which would include actually sections that would be in Representative Mariani's committee.
Mr. Holden here. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Members of the House and Chair, I'm Tom Holton, representing the Minnesota Community Education Association. I serve as the Director of Community Education in Bloomington-Richfield Schools and also was recently appointed to the Governor's Council on Early Education and Care. First of all, I'd like to say that I support efforts to improve the quality of school readiness programming for Minnesota's youngest learners. This bill, we think, provides improvements in quality rating, program coordination, access, assessment, transition to kindergarten, teacher quality, parent engagement, and ratios. And these are all measures that we think will improve our ability to ensure that all children are fully prepared to enter kindergarten with the likelihood they will continue as successful learners. There's one aspect of the bill that I have a concern. I'd like to talk to you about that concern, and that's a requirement in Section 4, Subdivision 3, and it pertains to program requirements, and it's item number 9, and that is the one that requires all programs to serve learners for a minimum of 12 hours a week. And although we support the idea of minimum standards, and we fully support the idea that more hours will be better for students, have better outcomes. The research supports that. We know that it would have positive outcomes. However, we have experience in Bloomington, Richfield, with phenomenal results with high-intensity programming. Parents program administrators, business leaders, you as legislators and teachers from across the state have in fact been advocating for programs with greater intensity. However, passing this provision now could lead to some serious, I think, unintended consequences. Funding levels for school readiness remain at the level of the late 80s or early 90s. Implementation of the 12-hour minimum would eliminate programs that allow some choices for parents that layer programs. They might use school readiness for a part of their programming and be in early childhood family ed or other programs together. So combined, the intensity might meet that level of 12 hours that we would all desire. It can also limit access for a high percentage of children from metro and rural districts. Setting this minimum standard would lead to a reduction in the number of sections offered, thereby raising the intensity for some participants, as the department had referred to earlier, but eliminating opportunity altogether for some other participants. And finally, there are a high percentage of smaller districts we've heard from across Minnesota, both metro and rural, where school readiness currently is the only option for a school readiness program. And requiring these programs to meet a minimum of 12 hours at the current funding level would mean the demise of many of these programs altogether, eliminating the only choice for those parents. And again, we would argue that it would be our desire to have programs of greater than 12 hours in intensity. We would argue that the gains dramatically increase 12 hours or even at 20 hours, but there is gain. And there is research that supports the idea that there's gain for programs under 12 hours, and we think some gain is better than the elimination of programs. So in summary, we support higher standards, better assessment, better coordination, and most of the provisions of this bill, but I'd encourage you to wait until we can afford to pay for the increased intensity that you desire in the bill. And thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Slawick? Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask, I'm not sure who, about the Subdivision 10A teachers. Who would that be? Parent Ms. Kyle?
Ms. Carlson.
Didn't work to go back in here.
I had about three questions, and I'm not. Was there anything in statute before about qualifications of teachers?
Representative Peterson, members, Mr. Chair, no, there was never any requirements about teachers. The only requirement about staff for school readiness was that a supervision requirement that the supervisor be licensed in early childhood.
Okay. Okay, then that leads to the second question. Does this exclude the supervisor now?
That provision, Representative Peterson, Mr. Chair, that provision would remain.
Okay.
And this would be additional.
Okay. Now, next question would, Mr. Chair.
Good.
Next question would be, would any of this be with the Board of Teaching?
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson, no, the Board of Teaching would not be involved because this is not a licensure requirement.
Mr. Chair, except for the supervisor.
Except for the supervisor, yes, okay. And they're already involved in that.
Okay.
And there is a waiver provision.
Okay, and two more questions that I'm finished. Now, I'm trying to determine, Mr. Chair and Ms. Carlson, I'm trying to determine here the role of the commissioner, because it says the school board will employ the teachers as determined by the commissioner. What does that mean?
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson, don't look at that language. Look at the amendment. The amendment on page 2, item 10, is the replacement for Section 5 that you were just reading.
Okay.
And we've got rid of that provision that you were just reading because of the employed business, and we can contract out to community organizations for school readiness, so we didn't want to have an employee-employer relationship with the district when they contract out. So.
Okay, thank you. And one last question, one last comment. You know, I'm always a little saddened to see that the early childhood teachers don't have a license. They're not required to have one, and I realize the realities of that. But I remember a long time ago when everybody said, well, kindergarten teachers don't need that. Anybody can teach kindergarten. They don't need a license either. And, you know, these are the most important grades and years of a child's life, and it seems to me we ought to have require masters or doctorates for these young children instead of just, you know, the minimal requirements that we have. And having worked in early childhood and then gone to the high school, I have to tell you, the hardest job in the world is, and I think the one that takes the most knowledge and skills is with these early childhood years, and that I thought it was wonderful to go to the high school, but a whole different kind of learning and a whole different kind of requirement was needed. But boy, I really think we're missing the boat at some point in time when we don't require licensed teachers for these youngest of children. But I realize the realities of that, particularly in the preschool programs, the readiness programs.
Just a comment.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? Representative Slavik, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank the department for bringing this forward. I think there is going to need to be healthy discussion among the members as we, today I'm hoping we'll roll this over into the omnibus bill, but the 12-hour requirement is something I think we really need to think about, as well as the 4 stars for the school readiness program. But this allows it to be part of the mix, so I think we can get it there. Thank you.
Thank you. I renew the motion that House File 1026 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance Policy Omnibus Bill.
Thank you.
Okay, members, we need to pass the minutes. Is there a motion? Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I would so move the minutes of March 5th.
Thank you. Representative Mariani moves approval of the minutes for March 5th. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 5th are approved. Thank you. Representative Stills, we're getting worried about you, so we're glad you're here, and welcome to the committee. If you'd like to tell us about your bill, or we have to move it, actually.
Madam Chair, would you like me to move? I would move, and I may need some help with the motion again, but I would move House File 106 be recommended to pass, and...
Referred to the Committee on Finance?
Referred to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you. Representative Mariani moves that House File 106 be recommended to pass and be referred to Committee on Finance.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize, members. I was with Representative McFarland. We're doing a bill together, and the only time we could get in to see the speaker to talk about some issues that have arisen was just now, so I do apologize. House File 106 is pretty straightforward. We already have a P16 partnership in place. And it is a wonderful organization. It represents all of the major MNSU, University of Minnesota entities. The current president is president, or chair is President Brunix. Before that it was Commissioner Segrin. Before that it was Chancellor McCormick. I believe we've had the P16 partnership since about 2005, and so it's or maybe 2004. It's been around about 5 years. A few years ago, well, 3 years ago now,
Chair Greiling, Representative McFarland, and I had the opportunity to travel to Austin, Texas on a wonderful, wonderful fact-finding trip. It was sponsored by NCSL, but also was the Gates Foundation and the Dell Foundation were involved in this. And this was the first time that I was exposed to the wonderful work that P16 partnerships can do. And this particular partnership was being chaired at that time by the State Chamber of Commerce president, or whatever you call his role in Texas. And he stood up and talked to the group that was meeting there and talked about this amazing coordination of expectations from the business community that is transmitted to the colleges and universities, who then have a clear expectation of the preparation that secondary schools are giving to their students, and they are not experiencing the high levels of remediation that we talk about here in Minnesota colleges. And part of it is that the expectations are clear of what skills students need to have when they go onto the college level. Well, what we are asking, and this kind of came around because the State of the State address that we heard back in 2007, our governor talked about some wonderful initiatives relating back then to the three R's. He added a fourth, which I totally support. He talked about rigorous academic work in high schools, and it was just it was a very wonderful speech, but on the other hand, those of us in the education committees were going, where did that come from? And why didn't we know about all of this? Why weren't we brought along in the conversation? And it was then that when we went to Texas, we realized, on talking to some of the people from NCSL, that some members of the Minnesota Department of Education and the P16 partnership had been part of that conversation in Texas with the Gates Foundation, with the Dell Foundation, and that is kind of what spurred this legislation. I would very much be delighted if we had four members of the legislature at the table with the members of the P16 partnership. And also to change it to the name P20 to include those young people or people who are working on their doctoral dissertations, who are doing research in best practices and innovations in pedagogy in education. And so we would like to, or I am proposing here, that we have one member of the majority party from the House and minority party from the House, one member from the majority party in the Senate, and one member of the minority party in the Senate, to be full members of this partnership and to be a part of those discussions so that we can bring those innovations that this group is excited about and the energy is there, to bring that to the Capitol so that we can transpose that into meaningful legislation that we can use for to make our schools better. So basically that's it.
Thank you, Representative Swills. Are there any questions? Representative Mariani?
Madam Chair, members, this bill was heard in the K-12 Policy Committee and was acted upon favorably and moved over to this committee because the partnership, of course, includes early childhood. And actually, I was looking through some of the cheat notes that I received from my staff, and I actually participate in this as a member of a nonprofit organization, not as a legislator, but I do know that there are former early childhood representatives at that table. I just can't remember the organization, but I know that they're there, and they've been at it within the last couple of years, so it's absolutely appropriate, it seems to me, for this committee to hear this bill and have, if it's successful, certainly have some expectations of that partnership relative to early childhood education issues. It's kind of an unusual thing. Typically, we'll create structures that exist within state government, and that's not the case here. But nonetheless, what you've got is a pretty dynamic table in the state of Minnesota that in many ways reflects tables that exist all across the nation. Not every state has them, I think, but we're getting pretty close to that now. And actually, this particular table was started by an initiative of Chancellor McCormick, who participated prior to coming here when he was Chancellor of the Pennsylvania Higher Ed System, participated pretty strongly in the creation of that entity. I do think that it's vitally important for us to have legislators formally participating in that process, and I would hope that we can continue to keep this idea going forward. We did, I believe we did incorporate this into the, yeah, we did, into the K-12 policy bill last year, and both Senate and the House agreed to that, but of course the policy bill was vetoed for other reasons by the governor.
Thank you. Representative Downey?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I feel like we're going to repeat some of the discussion from the K-12 Policy Committee, but I'm curious, maybe for the sake of some of the folks who haven't gone through that debate, we actually had a pretty lengthy discussion about the merits of this remaining as an independent, non-statutory entity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if you could just try and as fairly as you can present the positive side of having the legislature more formally connected with this via statute, and also some of the risks. And if, as part of that, if you could maybe give the sentiment of the group itself right now as to whether or not they really want to have this formally established in statute, and not that they wouldn't want legislators to be there, but whether they want that statutorily mandated in a voting capacity.
Representative Swell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Downey. That's an excellent question. And I can tell you I've done extensive research on this and have read numerous things. In fact, an article in your packet is from the governor of Colorado, Governor Ritter. And he gives this wonderful testimony of the effectiveness of the P16 partnership in Colorado, and some of the objectives that they are forwarding are many of the same objectives that we are concerned about here in our state. The lieutenant governor of Colorado is the chairperson of their P16 partnership, and the data shows pretty consistently that the most effective partnerships in the nation are the ones where the governor or the lieutenant governor are the ones at the table. But also when the legislators are involved, it is the seamless transmission of new innovations into legislation. Not everything is generated then from the department. It's more of an immediate buy-in by the legislator. Now, we heard a member of the, an official from MDE the other day, and you asked me what are the drawbacks. The only drawback that she could cite was bringing partisanship into the discussions of the P16 partnership. For the perception of many people is that the Department of Education, with, you know, all of the commissioner and the assistant commissioners are appointed by the governor and tend to represent his own party and his beliefs, there's a feeling, a tendency that the department is already somewhat partisan. I would like to not say that they are. I would like to say they have been amazing co-workers and colleagues in moving education initiatives forward. But there, sometimes, you know, that other side to the argument is not present when the MDE presents their point of view. They are very well represented in the partnership, but other voices that might be heard and could balance out that is they are not there. That's the only drawback that I have heard, and it's the only one that the Department of Education cited.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Swales. I do appreciate you bringing this bill forward. Good communication is always to be valued and sought after. It's too bad sometimes we actually have to legislate people to talk to each other, but I do understand that. Madam Chair, is it my understanding that the motion is to send this to K-12 finance?
Well, Representative Biskins, the way it works is we do our bill referrals to the Committee on Finance, and then they do the re-referral, but it would then go to the K-12 Finance Committee, yes.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. And the reason I asked the question, Representative Swales, is because I do have a few questions on the fiscal note. Fiscal note of zero, I find interesting, given the fact that we are requiring a report to be submitted to the legislature and how that report would be generated and who would staff the committee so that the report can be generated. There's costs involved to that, unless you have some benevolent folks who are doing this out of the good of their heart, which may be, I don't know. But I'm glad it's going the way it's going, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Swill?
Madam Chair and Representative Biskins, as I understand it, at least from the previous 5 years, the cost of the any reporting that has been done has been absorbed by the universities that have been facilitating it.
Any further questions? Okay. Well, thank you. With that, Representative Mariani renews his motion that House File 106 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? So passes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you. Members, we actually knew that this meeting, I don't know if I had articulated it to all the members, might end early, so we are actually going to meet in a separate room to go over some items. So if you all wanted to do that, obviously you could do that as well. The same thing potentially could happen on Thursday. We are trying to get ready for the calendar and figuring out our deadlines and figuring out exactly how the bill will travel. So trying to want to make sure that that's a clean process. Are there any questions? Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I appreciate that and the need to meet amongst your caucus. Madam Chair, do you have any idea when you'll be working with Representative Downey, the lead Republican, and sharing with him what the timelines are?
Representative Biskins, we've talked about it somewhat, about what they are. The sort of, I'll be honest, the debate that we're having a little bit is about whether we have to have a policy bill and a finance bill. So we have two separate bills, which is the direction we're headed. So that's the thing. We talked about it somewhat along those lines, but if we do, as you know, that changes the scenario because the policy deadline is so much earlier. So we have to pull out which bills we would be doing in terms of that and where they would fit into the calendar. But as soon as I think we'll be making those decisions today, Representative Downey, it is in our overall caucus. I know, so it may not exactly be today, I know we are having that discussion on Thursday in fiscal chairs to talk about that. As you know, because the budget is going to be the issue here this year, there's some concern about leaving policy on the table if we combine everything. You know, we may not have, because we all know we might be here for a very long time. So it might be good, and there could be reasons for passing some policy and trying to get some policy through. So that's kind of the dilemma that we're looking at. Okay. And Representative Downey, as soon as I know, I will let you know. I think that meeting is Thursday at noon or so. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. With that, the meeting is adjourned.